Welcome back to Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
The world of reviews on wine has blown up in the last 10 years for sure. And on the web, they've blown up like crazy, crazy, crazy. I miss a little bit the days when Bob Parker, who's the local guy, Robert M. Parker Jr., who's the local guy, who is a real person, who is a very talented taster and writer and consistent evaluator. It was always nice to read when his report would come out every couple of months, and you would get his review, his personal take on a limited number of places in the world and the wines that he cared about and that he thought that people should know about. And he used a system evaluation with points that definitely helped people to begin to think about the qualitative level of wines compared to the price. And that, you know, I think it was kind of a nader-driven kind of thing, just a, you know, that quality-price ratio, like Consumer Reports or whatever. I mean, I think that in his whole generation, that's the thought process that had never gone on before them. And I think that you know, there's an everyman to that, quality to that, that I really appreciate.
Well, it's pretty easy to understand.
Yeah. And there's a big difference between, say, a 90-point wine and a 99-point wine.
Sure.
Just like at school, it's a whole lot harder to get.
Oh, it's just
almost perfect versus really, really good. You know, that's a different endorsement. But the thing that you learn when you read one writer like that who is consistent is the distance between your palate and that person's palate and what their priorities are and what your priorities are. And even if it's not a person that you know, you end up having kind of a relationship with their taste versus your taste. And reading can be very helpful on what they have to say. And you know exactly what good guidelines, it becomes good guidelines. But with now so many voices in the marketplace and all the online opinion and reviews and exactly what it's based on, people have a lot of feelings and they have a lot of self-promotion. And it's not as cut and dry as maybe it can be, or maybe what I was taught, the old 20-point system where you're breaking down a wine based on different characteristic levels and no, it's not possible to get 20, but once you start crossing 16, you got something pretty worth drinking. And it's interesting, even a lot of the old English writers and the old English psalms there's certain places in the world they would never allow to pass like 18 and a half points.
Oh, wow.
You know, because of their particular prejudices.
Huh.
And I think that's a little bit, it's a little accurate and a little bit of a shame. You know, I think that they're remarkable things, possible in a lot of places. But those things are interesting. All right, now you asked me, so I'm coming after you on the top 10 dishes. That's what everybody wants to know anyway. So, best dishes you ever ate?
Sweetbreads.
How?
At the Whitehall Club in Chicago in the 1970s. It was with lemon brown butter and capers. And we're just, you know, I was a kid and had never eaten anything like that. And, of course, my father loved them, having grown up the way he did. And that restaurant really was responsible for my loving a number of things very young, smoked salmon, you know, and just walking into the restaurant and in the bar, you could do this back then. They would have sides of smoked salmon sliced and laid out on this beautiful old round wooden table with this gorgeous flower arrangement in the center and all the garnishes and the toast points and everything. And, you know, the waiter would go do your plate from that table. You wouldn't go do it. He would do it for you and bring it to your table mm-hmm. for you. And, I mean, it was sort of that, you know, again, we talk about your feelings about what's happening in a restaurant. And I mean, I loved going there. And it was always such a special thing to get to eat in this restaurant. And there was so much show because it was the old days and waiters were still doing a lot of tableside. And I mean, these are really three things that I really remember vividly from being, you know, in junior high or whatever, which was having Hearts of Palm for the first time. And it was a very simple presentation of chilled Hearts of Palm with a vinaigrette that was probably made with, you know, red wine vinegar and a little bit of mustard and eggs and oil. And it was very simple, but those things really left an impression on me. And I looked forward to having those experiences.
First, those little seminal things that we taste thing that we see for the first time. Those are so big. Those are so big.
What? Yeah, I mean, the impression was left, and just knowing that, and the men that my father used to travel to Chicago a great deal, so he was often in. It was a hotel as well as this club, and the waiters all knew my dad, and my dad was a great lover of food, and also, you know, just because he dined often by himself, he would always, you know, speak with the waiters and get to know them, and so he had a great relationship, and it wasn't that he was, you know, some great crazy man that they needed to be recognized. It was just because the waiters liked him so much. He was treated so well, and therefore, when my mom and I were with him, you know, it was just such a treat to go to this place, and I'll never forget that. So, you know, sort of moving forward in time.
So we're still on your first dish. You have big feelings about that dish.
I do.
Yeah,
I do.
That's
cool. There's, you know, people often ask me why I became a chef, and my mother cooked at home, and I never cooked when I was a kid. You know, sure, I helped make brownies or cookies or whatever, but you know, my mother was the cook.
Can't
in
imagine
the house.
Mom really allowing you.
Well, it wasn't that really so much as that she just felt like that was her. You know, she was
her
homemaker.
Gig.
That was her thing.
Yeah.
That was her kitchen was her office, and she was always in it. You know, unless she was cleaning the rest of the house or taking care of us somehow. But, you know, going to the sort of next time I think of my life was then when my parents had moved to Charleston, and I was 19 years old. And my chef, Marcelo Vasquez, who was someone that I later worked for, mom and dad and I would eat in his restaurant. It was only 35 seats. And he also did tableside. So I have a fondness for tableside. I miss those days. I wish that I could cook out in the dining room tableside in a real cooking manner over an open flame. And Marcelo would make steak tartare tableside that was the best steak tartare. So I've always had a fondness for that. And he would also do tornados of beef, so medallions of beef tenderloins sautéed with button mushrooms, and then he would flame with a little bit of cognac so that there was the flame going on in the dining room, finish with what was called demi-glace, which no one uses anymore pretty much, which is just even funny to say the words demi-glace at this point. And, you know, and then he would plate it, and Marcelo was very charming and still is very charming and charismatic and was really an amazing chef and a self-taught chef. So just that, again, it was that whole experience of being in this very beautiful restaurant that was in historic downtown Charleston, and his wife ran the front of the house. And as I said, it was only 35 seats. So it was a small restaurant that was very special and felt so special. And then here the chef comes out into the dining room and does all this tableside. And just, I mean, he made some of the best food I've ever eaten in my life. That's why I absolutely was just dying to go to work for him. And so that was another big influence. I mean, he was really my main mentor.
And so I guess I assume one of those is the second dish.
Uh-oh. I can't do eight more. But yes, I mean, it's you know, to just quickly go through, I think, a list of, you know, I would then move to Europe and, I mean, on my list of places to eat.
Yeah.
And, you know, I can't not say Beaugravier. I've had so many amazing restaurants, and Beaugravier is a restaurant in the southern Rhone Valley in a very small village called Mondragon.
And so what's the dish?
Oh, it's absolutely, well, it's hard for me to actually say that.
See, it's hard there.
I mean, there are like six.
There are several.
But
what's the pinnacle?
Oh, gosh. I have to say the chausson, which is a whole truffle with a seared piece of foie gras wrapped in pastry and baked as the whole thing. And it's just
It's baked in essentially
gorgeous.
Croissant dough.
Yes. Yeah, it's not puff pastry. It's a different dough. It almost feels like pie dough in a way.
It's a laminated dough, yeah.
Right, and then the sauce, of course, is a very light reduction with truffle in it, as if you didn't already have enough truffle because you just had an entire one in the center of your pastry. Now you're having sauce with it, but that's Beaugravier.
Mm-hmm.
My next favorite dish is at La Serre in Paris, which is long tubes of macaroni that run the length of the dish, and they're stuffed with truffle and foie gras.
Ugh. It's the theme, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, yeah. And then the sauce is, there's truffle. Oh, and I love it because they do these little slices of truffle that they cut perfect little tiny circles out, and they just dot them around the plate. I mean, oh my God, that's so extravagant to be able to slice the truffle and then cut it out into perfect circles. And then there's also a reduction sauce with truffle. And again, it's very light. And then a little bit of a cream reduction drizzled on the plate that has, you know, some sort of amazing aged piece of cheese in it, like Reggiano. So that, And that, again, is also environmental. I mean, you know, I could sit here and, you know, wax poetic over the interior of that restaurant, but we don't have enough time, or Tony's never going to get to one of his.
It's okay. Go, go, go. So what's next on
Benoit
your list?
Benoit in Paris. So, oh my gosh. Okay, so there's a sweetbread dish there, and this comes
You're
out.
You already sweetbreaded.
Oh, I don't care. En cocotte, en cocotte. And so it's in a little copper pan, and it has shell-shaped pasta, sirte foie gras, seared or grilled and or sautéed, I guess, sweetbreads, crawfish, which I
You're talking with the sauté royal.
Oh my gosh!
Sauté royal.
Yeah. It has a little bit of reduction sauce in it and cream, and it comes out in this copper pot.
And coxcombs.
You just like to cry when you see it. It's just so amazing. And I have to say the other favorite dish is their escargot. Their snails are the best I've ever had. And I know you would fight me on that because I'm sure you would say Lamy Louis.
They're pretty good.
But then I would move from there to Lamy Louis because that restaurant had such an impact on me, again, as a young chef, and getting the opportunity to see the first time we ate there.
To have giant food hurled at you?
Oh my gosh, giant food hurled at you. In a storefront restaurant that like kind of looks dirty and is not in the best neighborhood. And this is not an environmental thing.
No, there were
there is nothing about the environment that makes you want to go back there.
No, there were the first several visits, there were ladies of the night like cruising around the streets.
Oh, it's a tough place. But in the end,
people,
I mean,
got to work.
Yeah, the first plate we got was of foie gras, and I had just started working with foie gras as a chef before we ate there, and I had to teach myself. I had never worked with a chef that taught me how to work with foie gras. It wasn't really that big in our country at that time, and it came out, and I knew how much it cost, and it came out, and there were like four slices of terrine of foie gras.
Slabs
on one plate. And I was astounded by that. It was just, I couldn't believe that somebody would make it that way and have all that product on the plate. And then they would constantly be bringing you freshly
That's
done
why
toast
you
points.
You immediately order the giant bottle of Sauternes.
Yeah, you need it. You have to have something to wash it down. And then, and then the other thing is having the giant asparagus there. I had never seen asparagus like that. It was, you know, what, the size of your thumb.
Yeah.
And it was really big and you know, would be hanging off the plate. That's how long it was. And of course, peeled up to the tip. And then it would be
tender
with
tender every bit.
Yeah. And they would, wasn't that served with the vinaigrette, the bowl of vinaigrette? I mean, they would bring out a bowl of vinaigrette.
A glass kitchen bowl
of vinaigrette.
And a whisk.
Oh, it was
And you'd
so
see the mustard suspended in like the simple cooking oil and the white vinegar.
Great Scott.
You see the shallot and all the shrivel and a little mustard in
just
there.
Just gorgeous.
They'd whisk it and just kind of dump it on your, and then leave the bowl on the table.
And then the surly waiter would leave your table. And it's just, oh my goodness. I mean, there wasn't a lot of warmth and fuzziness coming from the waitstaff there at that time.
We became good pals over the years.
At that time, right. I mean, we definitely, when they recognize you when you walk in, that's a pretty cool thing. And then the next one has to be Bocuse, because I've all my life I've wanted to eat Paul Bocuse's food, and his 3-star in Lyon was the chicken and the pig's bladder and with truffles, and it just it comes out again. It's table side, of course. It is a theme for sure.
Yeah.
So it comes out and it looks like a balloon around the chicken, but of course it's the blown up bladder, and the chicken is just the best chicken in the world in the first place, and then it's prepared in the best way it could possibly be prepared, and then it's cut table side, and the sauce is just mind blowing, and I mean that was to have something that is so old world classic prepared by one of the greatest chefs of our lifetime.
Well, that's a 150-year-old dish.
Exactly. So what's your list, Tony? I haven't left you any time.
Oh no, I want to do a little quick ratio of yours. So how many dishes of the 16 dishes on your top 10 list, how many of them did not have truffles and or foie gras?
Probably not too many. There is a theme. I don't know. I said asparagus. Hey, I mentioned a vegetable.
You did mention a vegetable.
With vinaigrette. There wasn't even any butter or cream or anything on it.
No,
see?
It's true.
It's there.
It's true. It was just
I know.
Cute. And only 2 sweetbreads.
I am a butcher's daughter. What can I say?
Yeah, you are the butcher's daughter. All right. So my list is probably a little bit more eclectic than your list.
Mm-hmm.
And probably a little more peasant. Maybe. One of the first things that comes to mind, if not the first thing, is the lamb belly, the crispy lamb belly from Can Roca.
Oh my gosh, that was like a miracle.
In Girona, in Catalonia.
Mm-hmm.
That dish is amazing. Just the perfect flavor.
Perfectly executed.
Lamb. I think lamb might be the theme of mine. At Carre de Fouillon, there is the classic dish, because he's from the Pyrenees, the lamb that he cooks, the lamb leg, the tiny little lamb, like the entire side of lamb and the leg, cooked in clay.
That's amazing.
That they crack at your table. Everything else they do is new age and crazy, and they have this new age and crazy plate for it. But here's, it's lamb with salt and a little bit of spring garlic in clay.
Nice.
That's it. And it bakes in there. It cools in there. They crack it at your table. They take it out. They put it on your plate. They have a little sauce. You have some bread. You're hopefully drinking some ridiculous red wine, which I may be doing once in a while. But that's a crazy great dish. Ooh, Lamy Louis, many, many, many dishes. When the scallops are good, if I can keep them from overcooking them, they're spectacular with the roe. Also at Lamy Louis, when the beef is really good, they do get the beef from Burgundy that has such good flavors, not the most tender thing in the whole world. When there's that, when there's mousseron mushrooms, that can be spectacular.
Yes.
At Le Dôme, this is not cooking. This is called shucking oysters. Le Dôme, just to sit and eat.
In Paris.
A dozen oysters in Paris at that place. That's a happy thing.
They're the seafood
They get
restaurant
spectacular,
for sure.
Spectacular oysters. I mean, things the size, Beauclair, the size of a catcher's mitt. I mean, spectacular oysters. That's great. In Sardinia, some remarkable, again, lamb. Thinking about the winery di Torri and the little restaurant that they have, and the lamb stew with white beans, and it was lamb neck with white beans, very, very simple, and herbs from the underbrush, and cooked for 8 hours or something like this. So it's almost like a paste, and they give you this crunchy bread, and you put this business on there, and a little fruity olive oil, and some of the ridiculous wine that they have.
I'm starting to get very hungry.
Yeah.
That sounds so good.
I sound like Fred Flintstone compared to your foie gras list.
No. Oh, my goodness.
At Beaugravier, the best dish I ever had was maybe the first meal I ever had there, because I ordered it twice.
Oh.
And
yes.
It was probably the
yes,
most I've
did.
Eaten in one shot.
Oh, my gosh.
So it was an entire lobe of foie gras, and it's poached in chicken stock with truffles in a sealed pot. And then you just eat that foie gras.
Well, what's so amazing is we had never, I don't think you'd never seen that before.
No.
I mean, we knew people did it, but when they come to the table and they break the seal on the dough on the outside of that pan, and you get first aroma of the truffle and the aromatics and the foie gras. Oh, my goodness. It's like a miracle occurring in front of you.
That is spectacular.
Gorgeous.
That and is the frisée salad there.
Yes, I had a hard time not mentioning the frisée salad.
Covered with just the fresh shaved truffles. Those are the two truffle things for me. So the foie gras and chicken soup, and essentially with truffles that are from up the street, which is amazing. Other things on my list, a lot of very simple fish. A lot of very simple fish. Mario's cooked branzino stuffed with calamari for me. That's honestly one of the best things I've ever eaten, with stuff with calamari, lemons, and fresh bay on the wood grill. That was amazing. Yeah, no, it's things, I guess, for me, close to the earth, and great bread. The places where you go and you get amazing bread. Canoodle.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, from the secret restaurant. Up at the Prezzov, no question.
Alto Adige?
Yeah. The canoodle from up there.
Oh, yeah, so good.
The tripe with the egg from Genève.
Okay. Wow.
And Piemonte.
Oh, that's, gosh. Yeah. I could have mentioned the favorite dish from there, too. Oh, boy.
The carne cruda there.
Yeah, the carne cruda. Oh, my goodness.
The roasted goat from Bovio. It's where you literally have like a piece of whatever piece of goat that they cut, they roast it in the wood oven, they season it with salt, you get it on a plate. They get really, really nice goats. And maybe you want some olive oil for that. Maybe you put a little bit of wine vinegar on it. Maybe you just have it with the wine.
Bovio.
It's a very happy. You've just had an elaborate pasta. you had an elaborate antipasti. You just want the satisfaction of having that nice meat. I'm going to stop rambling about all the peasant things I want to sit and eat repeatedly.
And talk about a little wine?
Yeah, maybe.
Or a lot of wine.
What's the best wine you ever had?
Oh, you've asked me that before.
Yeah. I'll keep asking until you answer.
I'd say Heights Cellars, you know, back in the 80s.
It's that first stuff.
Yes, I agree. You know, I mean, it just left such an impression on me. I realized how much I wanted to learn about wine when I started drinking California wine at the restaurant where I did my apprenticeship in the early 80s. So Heights Cellars was, and Ridge, Montebello, some of these Ridge wines were just so amazing. But what would you say?
Lots of things. Strangely, first thing always comes to my mind is 1976 Salon out of a big format. That bottle of champagne I've had it a few times. It has always been crazy spectacular, incredibly long. That ends up topping my list, which you would kind of never, I mean, I can think of, you know, 2 through 10 easily, and it's really diverse and it's all kinds of things. And it's, you know, there's an Austrian white and there's bottles of Bordeaux and there's, you know, some ancient things, but that champagne, that's the one that kind of, it's just stuck there. No, nothing has unseated it. And it's not because it was the best champagne I ever had. It was the best wine I ever had. Anyway, that's all we have time for on Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine. We need to go make lunch. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And we'll see you next time. And if you want to follow Chef Wolf on Twitter or any of the social media devices, Cindy?
On Twitter, Chef Cindy Wolf. And on Instagram, Chef Wolf.
And if you want to contact us, maybe send us any of your top 10 lists, any of your favorite wines you ever had, you can reach us on WYPR's website. Email us, foremanwolf@wypr.org. If you want to download this or any other programs as a podcast, go right to that YPR website. Thanks for listening.